dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk, Shane Combs, Matt Combs, and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SBC fans, and welcome back to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk online radio show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, coming to you for the 103rd episode of our podcast show, and excited about the final 2 weeks of fall here. We'll be with you here throughout the remainder of this this show, as well as next week. And I'm joined, as I always am, by my brother Matt and good friend Jeremy Ward. And guys, I look at one more show here. I guess we are looking at, by next week, getting to the playoffs in football and hopefully to the state in volleyball. But I guess in a little introduction to this week's show, I have to start with what a difference a week makes. When I look at volleyball recap, Jeremy, a week ago I was wanting five teams into the district final and four with the four to the Sweet 16 and two to the Final Four. And then all of a sudden, 2-5 set heartbreakers later, we're looking at half that with two to the regionals, and hopefully we can get one to the Final Four. But, you know, Jeremy, I guess I knew going into the week that Huntington probably had the toughest district semifinal matchup, and then Uniota I thought was going to have the toughest final. And, you know, Huntington had two match points there, unable to get that the one ball to fall in. It just kind of caught the wrong side of the line there. And then Uniota had a little adversity hit. They were up 2-1 nonetheless, and they were unable to finish off a really, really good Athens team. I really enjoyed that match over the weekend. Some of the best volleyball I've watched all year, just in terms of atmosphere and just athletes and size and talent on the court. So, you know, Jeremy, as you look back, volleyball week that was, you know, we can break it down, analyze it here in a little bit, but just I guess maybe your thoughts, reaction to where the SVC stands, and you know, obviously with Southeastern, Huntington, Uniota now with their season coming to an end.
Well, you said it best. I think probably worst case scenario looking in, you knew you thought you would possibly those two teams would be the most likely to get beat and not make it to the regionals. And, you know, it's a game of timing, and sometimes things go your way and sometimes they do not. But I know that Wheelersburg team, and in the case of Huntington, has really come on as the season as it's gone along and gotten better, and they've got a lot of nice athletes, and that Athens team and their size and their power, very, very similar to Uniota. And they just seem to have a little more size at the net. And when that rotation hit in their favor, you really gave them advantage, I felt. But, you know, you just there were some crazy athletic plays in that game, and, you know, just some unbelievable heart and hustle from various athletes, no different than you'd expect from our talented SVC teams.
Well, Matt, I welcome you to the show, and let me shift gears over to maybe a football recap. When I go with my little introduction statement there of what a difference a week makes, you know, here we are a week ago. We're looking at from a prediction standpoint, we're like any fans that are out there. You look at something on paper, you predict it. Sometimes you have a rooting interest, whatever it might be. And, you know, it was looking like Paint Valley was on a road to gold, and it looked like Uniota was maybe trying to go 9-1. You look like Zane Trace maybe hiding in the weeds there, hoping something could happen. And I tell you what, we get a Piketon upset, Uniota scare, although they survive. And now Zane Trace, you know, don't look now, but here's Zane Trace and Uniota playing for, you know, maybe controlling their own destiny, I guess, in terms of the league title. And Paint Valley is now going to have to play for a share. But it does look like their playoff hopes are still intact. I guess, Matt, again, we'll, as I was saying to Jeremy, we'll have plenty of time to break it down and analyze it, you know, on the field in terms of later in the show. But for now, just, I guess, when you look back at this this idea of what a difference a week makes. Just your thoughts, reaction, maybe coming home as you heard the results Friday night and as you had a chance to digest over the weekend.
Well, it was certainly surprising to me on Friday night. I didn't see that coming. I mean, you know, you got to tip your hat to Pike, and but I'd be lying if I said I thought that was going to happen going in. Piketon absolutely got manhandled the week before against the Uniota team, and you just sort of thought, well, you know, Paint Valley will roll through this one. It just didn't work out that way. And I know, you know, they faced some adversity in that game. We're going to talk about that later with some of the injuries and things like that. But what a job by Piketon really to step up and really have the shocker of the year, in my opinion, in the league, considering everything, all the circumstances surrounding it. And then what it does is, like you said, I mean, we're talking last week, Uniota probably not going to make the playoffs. That still looks, you know, not likely. But all of a sudden now they're right there in the mix along with Zane Trace to maybe get a piece of the league title. So it it definitely makes for an interesting week 10.
Well, it certainly does. And, you know, Matt will get a chance to comment a little bit on the volleyball later and Jeremy on the football there as well. But, you know, for guys, where I want to go now is I want to ask the fans. Fans, if you were in charge of writing a recap of this fall in the SBC, what would be your title? I will ask Matt and Jeremy next, and I'll give you my unfortunate headline. You know, guys, just probably somewhere around Thursday evening, Friday morning, I got to thinking, as we start to transition from fall to winter, I always start to look back over the website and think, okay, is there some different things I'd like to do? And you know, going into the preseason of winter, what are some features on the website that people seem to enjoy? And I guess I started to recap the fall in my mind, and I thought to myself, what would be the overriding thing that jumps out at me, if I had to sum up the entire league? We have a lot going on. Obviously, we have some cross-country success we'll talk about later. We've had a little bit of soccer success. I know Uniota boys got beat in the district final, and then Zane Trace won the D3 with a 2-1 win, I believe, over South Webster there. So congratulations to them. And, you know, then we talked volleyball, we've talked football, and so forth here. And I guess I get to the point where maybe even include golf. But the thing that jumps out at me, and this is probably a little bit unfortunate, but it's just me being honest, is probably the influence of injuries. And if I had to put an unfortunate headline on the fall, I think that's what it would be. And, you know, Jeremy, I'll start with you on a volleyball side of this. I think back to the beginning of the year. I'm over at the preview, and Westfall's Hannah Phillips, I know, went through an injury that kind of slowed the Lady Mustangs early, all the way probably up to the first Uniota match. I don't know exactly how healthy she was. That was kept pretty hush-hush. I know Delana Gregg had a pretty bad ankle injury early in the year, and Huntington played a really tough part of their schedule out of the gate. I know she wasn't near 100%, probably almost to match 7, 8, 9. I don't know that she ever really got there. And then obviously the one, Jeremy, we were calling the game that night live when Jenna Hutton goes down, and we've documented her injury throughout the year. And then It hits the postseason here over the weekend. I know Kari Neff had an ankle injury. I believe it took place Friday night in practice.
Friday night, yeah.
Yeah, it was brought to my attention Saturday morning, and I know throughout the entire day, just the coach in me, my head started spinning in terms of, man, if I was coach right now, what would I do? And I was playing around with Uniota's rotation and different things. And as I expected, as I got to the game, you know, Kari's one of the toughest kids you'll watch play any sport in our league. She gave it a go. I really watched her in warmups, and, you know, she was coming down on the 1 foot favoring it a little bit. And, you know, she gutted it out. She played. I certainly know Uniota doesn't want me to sit here and use it as an excuse for him, and that would be probably too disrespectful to a really, really talented Athens team. But nonetheless, it's a factor. Probably, I'd say, hurt Kari as much as anything defensively, just trying to move the side-to-side movement. But I tell you, I give Kari a lot of credit, just the guts and the effort that she played with that day for her team. And so, Jeremy, I guess I go through all that. I know you follow SVC volleyball the same as I do. When you hear that title, do you kind of see where that would kind of jump out at me as something that's impacted the volleyball league in some way from start to finish?
It certainly does. And we talked about that at the onset of the season, you know, how injuries impact probably could be the biggest determining factor in who wins and who loses when you have the talented teams that we have at the top of the league. And certainly that was a factor in the case of all three teams. And you certainly could argue that, you know, you're going to have a little bit of what ifs because of that. And, you know, the unique thing about volleyball, it's not just the one spot in the rotation. It's, you know, having to cover down, you know, off the corners and having to protect somebody that's not 100%. Mm-hmm. Just taking everybody else maybe a little bit out of their best, you know, trying to cover that. And sometimes that brings out the best in teams and it helps them in the long run. And sometimes it's, you know, when you're trying to figure it out on the fly short term, you know, it kind of takes your sharpness away.
Sure, sure.
And but you know, the fact of the matter is that no matter what the sport, you get deep into the season, you're going to have, you don't always have your best day. You can't always judge what everybody does on their best day. You know, the truly talented teams are what they are when things don't go well. And I think you saw that in all instances. At times, Adina played very well without Hutton, or without Hutton being 100%. And the same thing, you know, Westfall could still battle early on. And definitely Unyoda still competed and had opportunities, even not at full strength Saturday. So it's just part of the game. It's part of what makes sports all that they are, that you just can't, you can't predict exactly what's going to happen. And, you know, you don't have the weather influencing things in volleyball like you do some of the other sports, but certainly injuries are something that can have a, just an incredible impact on the way things shake out.
You know, Matt, in volleyball, probably more than any other sport I've been around, chemistry is probably affected by a rotation change. You get so used to, in a defensive coverage, knowing who's to your left, your right, in front of you, or maybe behind you. When you're at the net, you know, having a sense of one another and what you're going to do. So it probably can impact volleyball more than any other sport. But I guess when I hear this, I think you and I are like in this way. The first reaction is your human being side, where, you know, here's a senior or whatever. It's kind of makes you sick of your stomach and you hate it. But the competitor in you, and as a coach, I think you and I probably do the same thing of, well, what do we got to do to be better? What do we have to do to get through this? And so I'll ask you to put that coaching hat on for a second and explain to the fans maybe what's the biggest difference in your mind, saying losing a kid, oh, maybe in the preseason, compared to the night before in a game or right in the middle of the game, the timing of it all, what's some of the different things that change that, that's a particular situation? And is even the word distraction, I don't mean that by, you know, something negative to a kid getting hurt, but I'm just talking and trying to keep, you know, teenagers focus and teams together here. Can it be somewhat of a distraction even?
Well, it definitely is, because, an injury, because it's on the kids' minds too. You know, whenever they see a teammate go down, the same emotions you just talked about, they feel bad for that person, and then they start thinking, okay, how's this affect us? And then it is he or she going to play? Are they not going to play? You know, so it does become a distraction, and it's no fault of anybody. It's just natural, you know, human reaction to things. But I think, to answer your question about the timing of it, I think timing's everything with injuries sometimes, because no matter, you know, when you lose a good quality player, like, you know, like some of the kids we're going to talk about throughout the show tonight, I'm sure, with the injuries we've had, it's going to hurt you. You know, coaches, it's like the old cliche, you know, when we talk about injuries, we're probably going to, I'd like to set the over under on about three cliches we'll probably use tonight, you know, because you'll hear things, you know, you'll hear things like, well, they're a part of the game, and next man up, and all these things that coaches say. But but in reality, you know, you do want players to step up if somebody gets hurt. But in reality, if it's a really good player, you don't have somebody that your next man up, so to speak, isn't as good as that person that just went down.
Right.
And that makes it tough, you know. So you have to start readjusting your strategy and figuring out. And the timing of having it happen to you all of a sudden, whether it be in the middle of a game, and then you're like, oh, man, what do we do here? And then the kids are like, well, you know. Or in Uniota's situation where it happens the night before. That doesn't give you much time either. You know, you've practiced, you've played a certain way all year, less than 24 hours before you got to do your thing, you have this kind of injury happen, and so now kids are wondering, okay, what's my role going to be? Is it going to change a little bit? The coach probably sits at home that night thinking, what am I going to have to do to shuffle things a little bit? And it's just, it's tough, you know, whereas if you have a whole week to get ready, maybe that helps a little bit, you know. So sometimes it's the timing of the injury.
Well, Matt, let me stay with you real quick, because you had mentioned football, and this headline that I'm using, injuries or the influence of injuries, certainly goes well beyond volleyball. I got to thinking of the football league, and, you know, one of the reasons I was so confident in some of the things I was talking about is, you know, it goes back a couple weeks to the injury of Python quarterback Devin Brewster. And yeah, for a couple different reasons. Brewster, I think, has only been able to play on the field in about 6 weeks, and in 6 weeks he has over 1,000 yards passing. He's a really good runner. The Fremder kid in the backfield with him, I think, is up around 200 carries after the 30-plus he had the other night out in Bainbridge. And you know, Python has a couple of really good pass catchers with Thacker and Southworth and so forth. And, you know, I'd mentioned last week's show, I think the Berkheimer kid's a really good one. I think, you know, the backup quarterback, Eric Python, now taking over, he is a good athlete. I know he jumped in the Vinton County game earlier this year, and I know, Matt, you guys down there at Vinton County were real impressed with him. I watched him play in a JV game for about three quarters early in the year and saw some things I liked. But then, you know, last week I went down and watched Python Uniota, and Uniota just really had their way with them. And that really just made me feel like that Python wasn't going to be able to respond. And I give Coach Gallion a lot of credit. It sounded like in the play calling, he was really creative. I've always said Coach Gallion's one of the great offensive minds in our league, does a really good job of coaching the quarterback and calling offensive plays. And I thought he did a good job of getting his older guys involved and getting people in position to make plays. And, you know, Matt, I guess this is an example of what you're talking about. When you lose a kid the way Paint Valley did Tegan McFadden, I know the SVC leading rusher at over 1,100 yards and second leading tackler on his team and probably one of the great all-around players in all three phases for Paint Valley. That's a little bit of what you're talking about. It's the difference maybe of trying to figure out right in the middle of the game, hey, what are we going to do compared to having a week or two and getting a young quarterback a little bit more familiar, maybe making that playbook a little thicker.
Yeah, that game right there is really the absolute case study for what we're talking about tonight in terms of timing of an injury. You know, Python, you know, it looked terrible, obviously, against Uniota last week. They have a week of practice with their backup quarterback to get him a little more comfortable. I'm sure Coach Gallion took a step back and said, look, guys, I realize, you know, this went terrible, but let's just go back to the basics here and let's start over. Let's what are we going to do to get it done this week? So he had kind of a week to prepare for that, did a great job, obviously. His team was ready to go. And then Paint Valley gets hit right in the middle of a game with an injury to one of their best players, if not their best player, and that hurts them defensively, hurts them offensively, and all of a sudden, again, you know, I'm sure, because I've been there before, you'll see kids start to look at each other at halftime, like, what are we going to do? What's, you know, is he going to play? Is he all right? You know, and then all of a sudden, the coach is trying to figure out, how are we going to adjust? We just lose this much talent off our field. How are we going to piece this thing together? It's a perfect storm sometimes, and you run into a little bit of a buzzsaw, and it sounded like that's what happened the other night.
Jeremy, isn't it a little bit of a domino effect? I think sometimes this point I want to make here is what the average fan doesn't probably understand. When one guy goes down, as Matt said, chances are if it's a really good player, you probably don't have someone to become that person. But even if you have someone close – it starts to become a domino effect where, for example, we saw this last year with Paint Valley when Mark Clifford was out for about a game and a half. Teagan jumped up into his role, but who is it that takes Teagan's role? If Teagan gets hurt this year and Tony Hatfield becomes in there, well, who becomes Tony Hatfield? And it's one of those situations. I think you see it in volleyball a little bit. You can definitely see it in football. Do you follow that analogy, and do you agree with it in terms of the domino effect on how, as one person steps up, eventually you, at a high school level, you're probably just not going to have the depth to make the thing look the same as it was before?
It certainly does from a talent perspective, and you're talking about, you know, replacing, you know, one for another. But at the end of the day, it's the psychology of the matter. You're dealing with kids trying to become familiar and comfortable with their role, and then you shake it up on them, and it not only affects that spot, the person taking their spot, you know, and so on and so forth, like you're saying, the domino effect, but it has a pretty good effect on everybody else. I mean, players like McFadden have a bigger responsibility than running the ball and tackling. You know, they're going to be in charge, kind of emotionally, as a leader with a team. You know, I would say they probably play, you know, Teagan probably plays a pretty big role in that huddle, on both sides of the ball, you know. So who's going to do that? It's not just the physical, who do you put in that spot? It's all the other things that they might bring you. And, you know, and again, it just comes with comfortability in the roles that kids have. And if you can get kids comfortable in what they know they're expected to do, and then that gives them the confidence to go out and perform. When you shake that up, physically, you know, lots of kids are capable of doing those things, but having the, you know, being able to be relaxed and confident is, you know, a completely different story.
Well, Jeremy, let me stay with you. I know Matt said that we would have our cliches. Well, you know, here's another one. When we always talk about kids, hey, you have to be ready when your number's called. And it got me thinking about Eric Hosley's situation. I know Uniota had quite the scare the other night against an Adena team that I know their record's kind of, you know, not what we're used to seeing Adena's football record, but nonetheless, they have some really talented skill kids in, with the Thomases there and Free and Thatcher and, I know I'm probably missing some, White Shanton and so forth, but I wanted to talk to you about Eric Hosley's situation where he seems to have some sort of injury that's maybe lingering on throughout the year. And I'd first heard about it back in about week 3 or 4, and I didn't see much of it throughout the year. But then at the Piketon game last week, I noticed he was coming out 4 or 5 times throughout the first half. And then the other night against the Dean, it sounds like it kind of started to show up a little bit. Whenever you have a young backup quarterback there on the sideline and you have, again, such an elite talent like Hosley, as a coach, how much are you in that young player's ear throughout the week, and how much does that affect maybe your practice in terms of trying to put that younger kid into some situations?
Well, I think that's a good point. You know, it really goes back to the preparation. Especially in football, I think when you have a week to prepare, I mean, football is so unique in the way it's set up, that it's very systematic. You know, week to week, you're just making slight adjustments in what you're going about. You know, it's rare to overhaul. So if you have coaches that are always prepared too deep at every spot, then chances are they have a little bit better chance, you know, a little opportunity to have some success. But, you know, I think in a case of Hosley, there's just certain athletes that you don't have another one of those guys hanging out back there. And you're running an offense, and all the things you do are based on that particular talent. It's completely unfair to expect anywhere near the same, you know, results or the same level of play for the entire team with a player like that missing. I think that's the uniqueness of the quarterback position. And as it's evolved to what it is today, even at the collegiate level, you know, if your backup isn't the same type of player as your starter, right, you know, it changes everything dramatically. And, you know, so when you're prepping, it's not just that position prepping, you know, the offense kind of revolves around the personnel.
Well, the young Edler kid comes in, does a nice job. I know Benninger was big time in that game the other night. And then, of course, the X factor that Uniota has against pretty much the entire league is with the great kicker and Kozad to make sure that every time they get in the end zone, it's an automatic seven instead of just six. So, you know, Matt, it got me thinking a lot of times as a coach, when we talk about decisions as a coach and second-guessing coaches, so much of what we do probably goes back to our experiences as a player. And as we're growing up, we see how different things are handled. It got me thinking of back when you're in high school. I know we have some older SVC listeners that enjoy kind of talking history and different things. So I thought of something today that I thought was an interesting example of this. You know, as a lot of people know, Matt's junior year, Uniota went to the state finals. And Matt, as maybe talk to fans through the scenario, coming back in your senior year, had some pretty good talent back. And then about a third of the way into the season, you came through an injury that was pretty significant. And it kind of went through a lot of the stuff we're talking about, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we had an injury to Dan Cox, who some of the old, like you say, older, I guess, SVC fans or long time. Let's be kind to them. Long time SVC fans might remember, but a name they might remember. But Dan was a starter as a junior on our state tournament team. You know, he along with a couple of us other guys returned. We expected to have a big year. We were 7-0. He went down with a knee injury. We lost the next three games, all league games, without him. And it just all of a sudden now the confidence in your locker room, the, you know, just the way you're approaching your business every day, it changes. We eventually got him back and played really good, you know, basketball at the right time of the year, made it to the district finals. And he breaks his hand at a pep rally of all things. All right. I mean, we've all heard of these weird injuries, a guy slipping in the shower, you know, a guy sneezes and breaks a rib or something, or what, I can't remember who that was, some baseball player. But Dan, you know, they were doing the old give me a U, and the players would get down and spell it. Well, Dan was a pretty intense guy. He decides he's going to dive down there, full go. Lands on his hand, breaks his hand about 4 hours before tip. So, you know, you talk about adjusting on the fly, you know, when something like that happens. So, you know, injuries, they're so, you know, obviously we know, like another cliche, they're part of the game, but we know that. But you don't expect them. You know, you don't sit around thinking about them as a coach. You don't sit around expecting them, really. You know that they could happen, and when they do, sometimes they just take your breath away a little bit, especially when they happen suddenly. And I think, too, the injuries that happen to kids that are nagging to where they're in a game, out a game. I don't know that we've necessarily had that situation in the SVC this year, but, like, you'll see those, too, and those become a huge distraction, you know, where a kid can play 2 or 3 weeks, and all of a sudden he re-injures it, has to sit a couple weeks, tries to come back. I had a kid with a separated shoulder years ago who would play a few games, get hurt, have to sit a couple weeks, play a few games, and it's really tough because – you know, the whole team's like, is he going to play this week? You know, and it becomes, those aren't the things you want your kids thinking about. So you said at the beginning of the show, they were a distraction. And besides losing a talented kid, they do become a distraction to the whole team.
Well, Jeremy, before we move on here, I guess the last thing I wanted to ask you about was the word chemistry, because you know me well enough to know I'm pretty big when it comes to that, especially at the high school level. I think you have to have great chemistry. I think you have to be a close-knit group, and I've seen a lot of teams very similar. Well, let's just use Uniota Volleyball. I'd written the article here recently, growing as champions or growing into champions. And I've seen a lot of that growth in them. You know, this week when I watched them play at the district level, when they dropped the first set to Fairfield Union on Thursday night – or on Wednesday night, excuse me, and then watching them battle through that the other day – This was a close-knit group. They were on the court as one. Even when things went wrong, you'll see them come together and talk about it now and different things. Well, how much does chemistry play a role in teams being able to handle this? And ultimately, I mean, obviously talent's important, but ultimately in the end, the ability to handle the adversity that you're probably going to face throughout the course of the year ends up playing a factor in your success.
Well, I think that's on the money. You know, the psychological impact, it's the positive and the negative. And when you can trust in everybody beside you, when things do go wrong, you know, you always have everyone else to come back to. I guess if you look at it that way, whether it's 5 on the floor, 6 on the floor, 11 on the field, 9 on the field, whatever it may be, you know, when something is going on, whether it's an injury or, you know, just, you know, a bad night on someone's part, if you have a close knit group, if you have people that trust each other, they'll just instinctively cover for each other. And I think that you see that, and there are, there's always things that go on and little injuries and, you know, kids not feeling well or whatever it might be, outside things going on, and everybody just kind of picks up a little bit of the slack and they just kind of do it because, you know, like you said, they are kind of, you know, they are one, and they just take care of their business. And I think you see that a lot, and that's where the experience factor comes in, not only for Uniota, but a lot of these teams. You know, I think you see the same thing with Paint Valley football when they'll have an opportunity to do that. You know, like you said, learning on the fly is a little difficult, and sometimes you don't have enough time to overcome that. But I think that's a great point with the chemistry.
Well, I tell you, it's been an interesting conversation on this. Hope to get some feedback, and we can talk about it a little bit more next week if some fans have some things that maybe we've left out. But again, you got to give all the world, all the credit in the world to Piketon, the job they ended up doing this past Friday night as they shake things up a little bit. And again, congratulations to the seniors who had their volleyball career ended this past week. It's been a phenomenal year, and obviously best of luck to those who remain there as we move forward and try to get a team to the Final Four. Well, guys, I'll tell you what, let's shift gears here. We had some feedback from last week. We talked decision-making. We have a current SVC principal who has a lot of athletic background in the SVC, and I think his perspective is really going to help give the discussion a little better direction. Discussion that really is taking place off and on over the last couple of weeks. In listening to the show back, I was afraid that some people that aren't familiar with some of the process and so forth could almost look at it as coach versus principal versus AD, and that's not our goal here at all. But I do, you know, I do think the voice is a debate, and it is a neat thing to talk about. And I think, as you've heard me say, I'm big on communication, and communication leading to, you know, change when needed, or just enough communication to make sure that we continue to do things at a high level in this incredible league of ours. And, you know, as a coach, my stance was, you know, we're asked to do a lot of multiple administrative things, you know, whenever it seems to make the easier for operation. And as passionate in decisions a coach would be when it comes to impacting kids and programs and league, I feel like some of that I don't know the word, responsibilities may be limited a little bit. And to be fair, I thought that I needed to step away here in the early part of this conversation and make sure that we're allowing another side of the conversation to be heard. And that's why I wanted to really get some feedback from a principal. So I went to a great friend of mine, Craig Kearns. Craig, as many of you know, is a great athlete in the early 90s there at Paint Valley. He was an SVC champion in basketball, 1,000-point scorer, really one of the underrated basketball talents in the last 25 years in this league, in my opinion. I went on to play at Rio Grande, and he was a teacher. He was a head basketball coach at Paint Valley, led them to a sectional championship there in the early 2000s. And now he's been a successful principal at Adena High School. And as we had Craig onto the show here, guys, the first thing I basically asked him was just what his opinion on was in terms of how fair the coach's voice was in the SVC. Here's what he had to say.
Hi, Shane. This is Craig Kearns, the high school principal at Adena High School. Just calling in to comment about the voices that the coaches have in our league. As a high school principal, I sit on the executive council that makes decisions for our league, and I can only speak from my current situation and my experiences in the past. But when I was a head coach, I felt very comfortable voicing my opinion to our AD and principal. I was confident that they would share that opinion and I guess let my voice be heard in our league meetings. I think it's very important for an AD or administrator to be very open and communicate a lot with your coaches. That way their voices can get heard. In my current situation, I'm constantly talking to our AD, our coaches, just trying to get their opinions, see how they think things are going, what adjustments maybe we need to make in our league. Also, at each league selection meeting, where the coaches vote on all league, I know our secretary, Dave Warren, always asks coaches, what do you see? What do you want to change? What are some things that can be brought up at our next meeting? And then finally, the executive committee has invited coaches many times in the past to our meetings to get their opinion on their insight of their respective sport. I know the last time we had a wrestling coach come in, he gave us a lot of insight that, you know, things that we don't necessarily always think about as principals, which is always important. So we try to give a lot of options for our coaches to provide their opinion and to get their voices heard.
Now, guys, Craig goes on here, and I want to go ahead and use all of his audio so that we can just open up discussion. The second thing I was really talking to him off the air about was what brings on some of the consistency in this, and he makes some good point about some coaching turnover and some different things that he thinks leads to a consistency or lack thereof. Let's take a listen to his second answer.
When I took this position as a high school principal, I realized there's going to be a lot of things on my plate that weren't necessarily in the job description. So dealing with situations in the league just comes with the territory. When we talk about decision-making and some of the issues that come up in our league, I think it's important to be consistent. Our league's been around for 50 years, and I think it's a strong league, one of the strongest around. And when you look at coaches these days, there's a lot of turnover rate, and so as new coaches come in, they have different opinions, different ideas. I mean, you could literally change from season to season on different rules or bylaws in our league. For example, JV football, there's always a discussion on when to schedule them to play, and that changes as the coaches change. Every time there's new coaches come in, they want to play on Saturday. Another set comes in, they want to play on Monday. So we try to be consistent. We try to get with something that we think works and is effective for everybody, and we try to stick with that. And I think it's proven a good example of just how strong our league is. If you look around the league and you see the turnover of the coaches in different sports, some of your main sports, the coaches stick around a little longer, it seems. But some of the other secondary sports that maybe don't get as much attention, it seems like the turnover is a little bit more sometimes. But when you look around our executive committee and our league and look at the principals that are sitting on that committee, you see a lot of principals, administrators that have been around for quite a few years, 8, 9, 10 to 15 years, and even 20 or almost 30 years, I believe. So that's where our consistency comes in. We've got executive committee members that have seen our bylaws change, you know, a handful of times, and they're constantly studying them to want to make our league better and stronger. And we look at every issue every year just to make sure we're still growing, we're still being proactive in everything we do in our league. But we also want to remain true to the tradition and the strong feel that our league has. So hopefully that helps you out. Keep up the good work in covering our league. Thanks a lot.
Again, that's Craig Kearns, a high school principal out of Edina. I really thank Craig for doing that. Few people that I respect more across the league than Craig, and I didn't want to cut his interview in any way. I really thought it was really something that the fans would enjoy hearing on this particular topic. He has a great passion. You can hear him mention several different sports just in his examples and different things there. So I definitely thought that would be something that really added to the show, and I appreciate him doing that. And, you know, guys, I guess let me start with some feedback, and I definitely want to get your guys' take here. I want you to jump in. I guess the one thing I'll say is I have a lot of friends, a lot of family even, that's in the administration and things like that, so I have a lot of respect for leadership. I know I'm in a lot of areas of leadership myself, so in return, I always have great respect for leadership and authority, and I have no desire to ever want to be a principal. So I guess my passion comes from the teacher and coach side. So that's why I thought it was fair to get the administration voice heard here. My takeaway, Craig was talking a lot about communication from the coach to the AD and the principal, and perhaps that's where it's breaking down. So it might be a school-to-school problem. The other thing I think is important with principals and ADs, there's different levels of trust and friendships and knowledge, and with some of the coaching turnover, that's probably where some of those breakdowns come in the school. You know, Jeremy, let me start with you, maybe a little fair unfair here. I've always felt like the further you move away from something, maybe the less passionate you become. For example, if I'm going to tell you as my administrator how to vote and a discussion starts in the room, you may or may not know how to vote or how to say back. I like the wrestling coach coming in and speaking to them a little bit. So you kind of had that voice in there. Do you think it's fair to say that the further you move away from something, you're less passionate, and maybe that's where some of the coaches maybe get a little upset that they don't always feel like the administrator is going to bat for them?
I think that's part of it. I think another thing is, you know, when I was listening to Craig, first of all, I'm thinking, you know, just how much I respect what he does. And he's also very involved with youth sports. Absolutely. And he's very aware of the SVC, not just from an Adena perspective. And I will say this, and I'd like to get Matt's take on it as well. But I do feel like the one thing that is unique about the SVC that maybe I've never really pointed to in the past is that you have this understanding of what's good for the league. It's not only your school. And I do think the administrators and most of the athletic directors and even a lot of the coaches really look at it big picture. Obviously, they're, you know, 99% of their focus is on their job and their school, but they do have the awareness of, you know, big picture and how does that benefit the conference. And I don't, you know, in some of the experiences that I have, I don't see that every place, and certainly not to the extent as it is in the SVC. But with Craig and some of the things that he was saying, I definitely feel like when you have administrators that have diverse backgrounds and have been involved in a lot of things, and you know, you talk about having leadership roles in various areas, it's certainly beneficial because you're willing to. There's certain things that you know, and you know there's other things that you need help on, and you're going to go seek out somebody else that has more expertise in that area. And the more diversified you are as a leader, the better relationship you're probably going to have with the people around you. Just like, you know, he mentioned bringing in a wrestling coach. Well, I seriously doubt if they had past wrestling coaches or people with wrestling backgrounds, they may not be as inclined to do that. But if you know that you don't have anybody in that meeting that has a background in that, why wouldn't you want to include them?
You know, Matt, when I was listening to that, I've always defended the principals on a lot of this, in terms of with all of the requirements on the academic side and all the evaluations and the paperwork nowadays, I've always said I can understand where sometimes the JV Girls Basketball League or how we select the Volleyball All League or having an all-league pitching staff in baseball, softball, I understand where a lot of these things are scheduling wouldn't really be something that is at the top of their list. You know, as a coach, when you're trying to communicate to the head of your little league or to junior high or to parents, to players, do you find that the more people that become the middlemen, for a lack of a better term, maybe the less your thing starts to get along compared to maybe you getting out there and being able to address it yourself?
Well, I mean, I guess the further the chain goes, more of a chance communication gets broken. I can agree with that part of it. I think where I disagree with how most leagues handle their athletic side of things is I don't feel like they let their ADs at times. I feel like they need to allow their ADs to do their job. Okay. And that will in turn take a little bit of their load and responsibility off of the principals and superintendents. You know, I think as a school, if we're hiring ADs, okay, and they're supposed to be our athletic administrators, I think allow the ADs to go to the meetings, to set policy, Obviously, it needs to have the approval, though, of principal superintendents. You understand what I mean?
Absolutely. Right.
But rather than principals themselves having to attend, you know, in the league I'm in, the ADs go to a meeting, and a half hour later, the principals go to a meeting. You know, so is it really necessary to have both those people out of the building on the same day to discuss stuff? You know, why not allow the ADs to bring that back to the principals? You know, here's what we talked about, and here's what we – and I think that would take a little bit of the load off, because it's like you said, the principals really have a lot of academic things. And Jeremy can tell you this, obviously, in his first year as a principal, the academic requirements are getting harder and harder, and, you know, there's more and more and more they're throwing on to teachers and principals to have to do. You know, do principals really have time to deal with this athletic stuff that much? You know, so I would like to see it be a little bit more where the ADs are allowed to sort of, you know, do their job and take it to the principals or superintendents for approval.
Well, Jeremy, I guess in this discussion, I guess it didn't even hit me last week, but I mean, I guess within the three of us, we have a principal, we have an AD, we have a teacher coach. So it's kind of interesting to see where all of our perspectives are going to come and start to maybe come together in certain areas. I guess this long line of I don't know if red tape's the right thing to go through, but a lot of times I feel like some people maybe just quit or kind of deal with it and not really attack the problems. Is it fair for with principals in terms of having all of these things on their plate, or is it one of those things from a principal perspective, if you're going to be the one to kind of catch the grief, so to speak, you definitely still want to have that ability to make those final decisions in your hands?
I think it's a little bit of both. Certainly if it's going to come back on you, you're the one going to be getting the calls on it. You're not just going to, you know, pass that off. But at the same time, if you're a strong enough leader and you can delegate authority and have a trust in your people, you're going to have a lot more success that way. So I do agree with Matt that the athletic directors, if they are truly athletic administrators, and I think there are two sides to that. You know, at some schools, big and small, you have part-time ADs that are really only game managers,
right,
or they're schedulers. They're not playing that administrative side of things. A lot of the student athlete affairs still go back to the principal during the school day and not necessarily to the athletic administrator. In Matt's case, you know, he gets to deal with all of that. At some schools are asking somebody to do that on, you know, on a playing period and a bonus period in the afternoon, and that's just not realistic. So, you know, it's got to be frustrating when you have a handful of schools that have full-time athletic administrators that handle everything. And then you go to a meeting and you've got some people that are basically figuring things out as they go along. So, I mean, there's just so much it just differs so much from one school to the next. It's really frustrating trying to figure out what's the best way to approach it.
Well, that's really good stuff. And that's why I really enjoyed listening to Craig, because it really helped me understand from a coach's perspective that the communication does have to get better within the schools, so that these things, and I think it also can encourage coaches to hold each other more accountable. You know, if there's something I'm feeling passionate about in baseball, you know, I need to go to Gene Bumgardner or Ron Allen needs to be coming to me. Shane, did you tell your principal? Are we going to do this? Let's go. Or, you know, and we can kind of hold each other accountable in terms of this communication. So I just thought Craig's phone call was outstanding, and I thought it really gave maybe another side of the discussion that lets us know. But the bottom line of it is the communication is what makes the great things go, because the last thing you want is to just sweep the problem under the rug. Wednesday becomes Thursday, you know, October becomes November, as I like to say, and eventually we'll have summer break and we'll come back and do it again next year. You don't want it to ever turn into that. You want it to be something that, you know, if you're passionate about it, you want to be something that your voice is heard, and, right, and you want to make sure you understand the chain of command. So,
well, Shane, you think about it, it's like the old open door policy. You can say you have an open door policy, but if you're not going out there communicating with people and opening the door and walking through it with them to sit down and talk about it, all you're doing is saying, well, I gave them the opportunity to talk. Well, right. But did you really talk to them? And that's, you know, I think there's a lot of hang up on that side of it with the communication as well. So I think you're right on the money.
Well, and Shane, and I'll throw this in real quick. I know you're wanting to move on.
But, no, go ahead. This is good stuff. Go ahead.
But when, you know, Craig does a great job, like you guys said, at what he does. And I believe wholeheartedly that Craig cares about what his coaches think. And if they come to him about something,
no question.
You know, and he's been a coach, so he understands that. But in all fairness, there's a lot of principals and ADs, I believe, and I've worked with some, I've seen some from afar, who you can't trust to take your thoughts to the, you know what I mean? You might go to them and say, hey, this really bothers me. I think we need to take a look at this. And they shake their head yes at you. And then they never, ever mention it at the meeting when they go. Right. And, you know, so unfortunately, that's where the communication line breaks down. Sometimes there has to be a trust in your building of the principals and ADs trust their coaches to do the right things, and the coaches trust them to be their voice at the meeting, so to speak. And it sounds like obviously that's something Craig believes in, and that's why he's good at what he does. We need more of that, though. You know, we need more of those types of people that are willing Absolutely. To listen a little bit, because there are still a lot of people out there who won't, you know. But I guess you're going to have that in all walks of life.
Well, guys, I tell you, I've really, really enjoyed this segment, and I thank you, Craig, for the call, because again, I think it just generated great discussion. Obviously, the most of what we do here on SVC Sports Talk is talking kids, talking programs, but at the same time, we want to give all of our listeners a little bit of feedback on what goes into making the SVC so great. And I really enjoyed that. And I really think a lot of our coaches, a lot of our administrators, a lot of our fans and parents, you're going to enjoy that as well. And I'm sure you have feedback. Let us know what that feedback is, please. 740-569-3254. You can also let me know Facebook, Twitter, or in the inbox at admin1@svcsportszone.com. Well, guys, I'll tell you what, let's head to the 2-minute drill here in closing this evening. Got a great trio of rapid fire, all from the inbox, and all have been made into fair, unfair. So fans, as you play fair, unfair along with us, Jeremy, let's have you take the first one. Matt, you go in the middle. I'll take the final one. So, all right, Bruce, let's go ahead and see what you got for us.
Fair, unfair. When all is said and done, the most underappreciated team in all of the fall sports in the SVC is going to be the Zane Trace football team.
I would say that's fair.
Fair, unfair. Piketon and Uniodo both making the state in cross country shows that Piketon ending Uniodo's SVC streak was more about Piketon's emergence of a program and less about Uniodo coming back to the field.
I would also say fair.
Fair, unfair. The true answer to last week's question about why volleyball is becoming more popular than basketball is the fact that basketball is harder to play and less of today's kids are willing to take on that physical challenge.
This is about 95% fair.
Did you send that inbox question to yourself, Shane?
No, actually, a funny story behind that. The email must be someone who knows me pretty well, because it said, Shane, here's a fair, unfair question for you. And it was saying something like, I thought you were almost going to get it right last week. The bottom line of it is kids don't want to play basketball because it's harder. They don't want to sit down and guard anybody. They don't want to sit down. So that's the funny part of it. It obviously did come right down my lane, so I thought I would put it number three there and take it myself. But we'll definitely get to that here in just a second. Let's go back to the beginning here. Jeremy, talk to us a little bit about Zane Trace football team becoming maybe the underappreciated group of the fall.
Well, in listening Friday night, and I was out to eat, and then I was with a group of friends, and, you know, conversations kind of – it would come and go, and postings on social media as the scores come in, and everybody was talking about, you know, Uniodo controlling their own destiny, Paint Valley this, and it was like, well, what about St. Trace? St. Trace plays Unionetta next week. And yeah, all that's true. But, you know, St. Trace has kind of been overlooked here the last 3 or 4 weeks. They, you know, it seems to be the norm. They have a tough start and then they just quietly, you know, get better and better every week. You know, going into week 10, just like last year, they're the most dangerous. They're the most dangerous team out there in the league. So I think that's very fair.
Well, you know, Matt, I agree with everything Jeremy just said, because I even said on the Shout-O-Matic on Friday night, don't look now, but here's another, you know, week 9, week 10 coming up where Zane Trace just sticking their nose right in. And but on the answer here, if I'm being honest, I went unfair, and I guess it leads almost into your question, because I said unfair because I would probably have to go with the Piketon cross-country boys. I don't know if it's because cross-country is considered one of those, for lack of better terms, the secondary sports, but when I look at Kane Dixon and Seth Farmer and Zach Farner, and, you know, they just had 3 of the top 9 spots in the regional. Was Piketon's on their way to the state? This kind of leads into your second question. I kind of think we've underappreciated them a little bit. So if you have something there on one you want to share, go ahead and do that. But then lead us into your fair there on number 2 as we're talking about Piketon.
Well, I think it, you know, the only difference is, you know, now that Piketon has, you know, accomplished what they've accomplished, I think people are taking notice. I think when you start talking underappreciated, Zane Trace, people just haven't taken notice yet, you know, as many as you would think. You know, now if they go in next week and knock off Unionetta and get a share of this league, they'll start to get some recognition too. So maybe that might be a little the difference when you start talking underappreciated, but no, I think Piketon deserves all the credit in being able to end that streak and win the league. You know, I think a lot of times in sports we end up talking about the loser of a game or the team that finished second and trying to figure out how they lost or how they finished second. Well, we might want to spend some time talking about, you know, the team that beat them. You know, I think it's human nature. When I heard the Paint Valley Piketon football score the other night, I immediately started thinking about Paint Valley. Like, man, I wonder what happened to them. Well, wait a minute. Let's pat Piketon on the back for a second for what they did. Mm-hmm. And I think same is true with cross country. I don't think Uniota's program's in bad shape. Let's be honest with each other. And, you know, they're not falling apart at the seams here. I think Piketon just had a great year, and they earned everything they got.
No question about it. You know, Jeremy, I've always said it's kind of a thing that we talked about in baseball a little bit last spring. I always tell my guys that, look, in the SVC, as we've been trying to build our program over the last 4 or 5 years, the SVC is not coming back to you. You got to go get it. And isn't that what's happened here in question number 2? I mean, Uniota is going to the state themselves. They just had an individual Dave Magnum be the regional champion. This is just a example of a once proud program in Piketon kind of reemerging and coming to an elite level, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And I mean, you know, to be fair, you could see it coming. You know, they had a strong nucleus coming back and tons of experience. And I mean, just by the numbers, you figured that it was going to be really, really close, and then they had a great opportunity to overcome Unionetta, and by no fault of Unionetta's, because, you know, it is one thing where, you know, you can kind of track kids and track it is a little more predictable. Now you got to go out and finish, but you know, you certainly could see it coming at the end of last year and even in track with the performance and emergence of some of these athletes at Piketon.
Well, guys, on our third and final question, again, I was kind of laughing at the particular way that the email was worded. And I guess for me, the wording's probably a little bit offensive for today's society, as I was kind of making fun of last week a little bit. You know, sometimes, you know, people can get a little bit offended a little quicker than they used to. But when you break it all down, we talked about this, volleyball being so specialized, and volleyball, you kind of get to play to get better. You know, you kind of go and you're playing in matches, and you're serving, and you're passing, and you're setting, and you're hitting. Where in basketball, a lot of times it is probably a little bit harder. The different types of running. You know, I joke, I teach next door to Cheryl Nisley and have pretty much on the same floor there for about 15 years now. I make fun of her all the time. I tell her cross country people are just made a little bit differently. You know, when they can't wait for the last period bell to ring so they can go out and run like 5 miles. That's just different. You know what I'm saying? It's that doesn't make it wrong. That just makes it it different. I tell her, and she gets mad at me or whatever. We joke about it. But I think basketball is a little bit of the same thing when it comes to, you know, running up and down the court and playing hard and things like that. That's not to say volleyball is not extremely hard, but it's a different type of hard, in my opinion, in terms of, you know, the side to side, the jumping, the different movements. So I guess that's probably where it comes from a little bit. You know, when you look to, as they were saying, play the man to man, and it's a little bit harder. And you know, to me, that's a fair thing. I mean, Matt, when you looked at that, you know, with the way that was worded there, would you go fair, unfair, and why?
I don't know. That's kind of a 50-50 for me. I mean, I'm probably biased because I've spent my whole life involved in basketball, and obviously I've, you know, never played volleyball. And but so I don't know. I think every sport has its challenges. I mean, you can sit there and say, well, this sport's more physically demanding, or this sport's this. You know, if you're going to be elite, if you're going to be really good, and if you're really going to be committed, every sport's hard, you know, because sure, you're going to put the time and effort into it. And, you know, I've never left a golf course breathing hard, but I can tell you it's hard. You know, it's to me the most difficult sport I've played in terms of being good at it. So, I mean, it just, you know, every sport's hard. I think it might be a little unfair to say one's harder than the other. I still think what's maybe helped volleyball catch up to basketball is more of the summer and the club and the things like that that get girls involved at a younger age, get girls excited about it. And I think basketball may have to do some things to catch up eventually.
Well, Jeremy, in closing here, I guess that's where I'll throw it to you. I look at it a little bit of I think the popularity of volleyball and how great of sport it is. I've said several times, you know, I love me some baseball and basketball and everything. But if it's two good teams, I'll enjoy watching good volleyball as much as anything. But with that being said, I do think there's some truth in this when I look at the commitment of high school kids and the young ladies in terms of what they want to get involved in. Are you buying any of this, or are you more on the unfair side?
I mean, I get it. I don't disagree completely. I'm probably closer to Matt, and you know, I can see it. I can see it either way. It's probably a 50-50 thing. Again, I think volleyball is just unique, and I don't think it's not necessarily a sport that you can really play until, you know, you've had a chance to go through the developmental process a little bit more. So you've got, you know, kids deciding to really get into volleyball instead of their parents deciding for them to get them involved in volleyball like they do with a lot of sports when they're younger. And so I think they develop a passion because they've chosen it. And, you know, the running joke is, as I sat through and talked to some parents today at club tryouts for volleyball for the little ones is, you know, my daughter really likes this because my dad doesn't know anything about it. And he just has to sit there and clap.
And I mean, like you say, Jeremy, you start later, you know, because you can't, you know, when you're first, second grade, you're not capable of really playing volleyball, you know what I mean, in terms of games. And so you start later, and maybe there's a little less burnout, you know, for those people that believe in that. I mean, kids start playing soccer and basketball and football in the second grade. And maybe by the time they get to the eighth, ninth grade, they're just like,
they're looking for something else today.
Yeah, but with girls, if they don't start playing volleyball, maybe some of those girls, their first experience with it's sixth or seventh grade, and it's new and exciting to them, so they stick with it. So, yeah, I think there's some truth to that.
Well, all those points are really good ones, and we want to continue to get feedback. Fans, we're going to do one more fall show. It'll be next week as we start to hopefully we'll recap the SVC football race in terms of how it's all going to end up with our championship, and we'll take a look into week 10 playoff picture. And then, Matt, did you tell me in the recent ones here, I know we're recording on Sunday night, that Paint Valley's in?
Paint Valley's not only in, they've according to Joe Itells, they've clinched a home game.
Okay,
so
great.
They will finish fourth or better regardless of the result this coming Friday. Uniota is still hovering right there around that 13-14 mark. It would take a lot of stars aligning, I think, for them to get in. And obviously that's with them beating a really good Zane Trace team. So, but yeah, it's Paint Valley. That's the one little icing on the cake from the disappointment they went through, is they are in and they will host.
Okay, great. Well, so we'll be breaking that down. And then obviously, Jeremy, we hope to have an all SVC final on the volleyball side there in the regional. Absolutely.
Good luck to Westfall and Adina. They both have I think it's a great opportunity for those two to meet each other and send one to the Final Four.
Yeah, so we get one there, and then hopefully on to a state championship even. So
Zane Trace Soccer as well. Zane Trace Soccer.
Good luck to them. They'll be moving on to the regional level. So a lot going on. You can follow it on svcsportzone.com, and we'll break it all down. So guys, really enjoyed the show. Look forward to some great feedback. So fans, until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, for Bruce Knox and all the wonderful people at DBK Media Services, for Matt Holmes, for Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportzone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by svcsportzone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit svcsportszone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.